Square dance. Shopping for new clothing was relatively quick and painless for Tricia and Glenn. In the short time they'd been married, she learned how to manage him on shopping trips so that he wouldn't lose interest. When the shop owner found out who they were, she peppered them with questions about current affairs in Fuller County, especially about the discovery of Betty Worry's body the day before. Glenn dodged most of the questions by promising to give the owner a mention on his radio show the following week. After purchasing the necessary costumes and making a quick stop at a grocery store to pick up some food to share, Glenn and Tricia joined Fred and Kitty as planned at the VFW hall shortly after 6 for the evening's activities. They entered through a door leading directly to the second floor by way of an outside stair on the side of the building. The room was large enough to handle 100 people or so, with coat racks near the entrance and a small stage at the front of the room. Tricia noticed a man dressed in a shirt like the one that she had purchased for Glenn less than 2 hours earlier, setting up a portable sound system featuring a record player, a pair of speakers, and a mixing board. "That there is Hoak," Kitty told Tricia. "Hoke's the club caller. His real name is Harvey Oliver Kendall, but everyone calls him Hoak. He's the one I told you about." Hoak was tall, perhaps a bit underweight. Tricia noted that Hoak seemed to be enjoying himself. Laugh lines crossed his face while he was chatting with groups of people who casually made their way up to his table. "Did you get your tickets for Split the Pot?" Fred asked, interrupting Tricia's observation. "I'm sorry, what were you saying?" "I was seeing if you're going to buy tickets for tonight's drawing. We usually draw near the end of the dance and split the pot. Half for the club and half for whoever's got the tickets, whoever's ticket gets drawn." Glenn purchased $20 worth of tickets at Tricia's urging and gave them to Fred, who in turn gave the tickets to another couple who could probably put the money to good use if they happened to win. The potluck was underway within 10 minutes of their arrival and was finished by 7:30. A cacophony of voices filled the hall with all sorts of news, gossip mostly, along with more than a few introductions. Glenn, Tricia, Fred, and Kitty were sitting at a table with the husband and wife owners of the local movie theater, a retired plumber and his wife, a woman who worked at the driver's license test station, and a man who worked at the cabinet factory. All of them had read the story Tricia had written about the group and were happy that she brought a partner along with her this time. Hoak came to sit with the group for a few minutes, addressing everyone except for Glenn and Tricia by name. "Well, aren't you the fellow who took over the radio station in Magnolia when Zeke passed?" Hoak asked once he had a handle on who Glenn was. "Yep, one and the same." "Well, I'm really impressed you took the time to be here with our little group tonight." Glenn thanked the caller for the compliment. Hoak finally stepped up to a sound system to start the dance. "What do I do?" Glenn asked Tricia. He was lost. "Just listen and learn. It's not that difficult." Squares were formed. Fred and Kitty stood opposite of Glenn and Tricia. To their right was a couple who owned the movie theater, and to their left was the plumber and his wife. "I'm your partner, and Bessie Corcoran over there is on the left is your corner." Mrs. Corcoran bowed and gave a slight curtsy to Glenn. "There are a few basic moves you should know," Tricia continued. "Swinging is when you take either your partner or your corner and spin with them." And Tricia led him through a swing just to show him. "The do-si-do goes like this," she said, and gave a quick demonstration. "Circle right or circle left is self-explanatory. Everyone in the square joins hands and circles around. If you pay attention to what everyone else is doing, you'll do just fine. The caller will usually explain most of the moves in a dance before he starts it. Most of the time, there are people here who haven't done this before, just like you." For a short while, Glenn acted as if he had 2 left feet, but by the end of the first set, he was laughing and enjoying himself. Hoak seemed to have a knack for putting first-timers at ease, while at the same time catering to the more experienced dancers in the group. "I'd like to have a word with you before you leave, Mrs. Michaels," Hoak said, pulling Tricia aside between the second and third sets. "Kitty said you might be interested in hearing something about the sheriff of Fuller County back when the Browns disappeared. I don't know what she or Fred may have told you, but Sheriff Ross wasn't exactly the kind of man you'd want to have in charge of a sheriff's office. Most of his deputies were decent, though. I've heard some pretty tall tales about the day when the Sheriff Ross was in charge, but just for the record, most of them were just stories. That's all." Trisha's interest was piqued. After a final set, she told Glenn about Hoke's request for an interview before going to the stage to help the caller tear down the equipment. "Well, as I told you earlier, I know a little bit about Sheriff Ross," Hoke began. "According to my daddy, the sheriff lived until he was 93. He died easier than maybe he had the right to. He got up one morning, had a bowl of oatmeal for breakfast, sat down in his favorite chair, and expired. He was living with a sister at the time up there to the top of Possum Hollow and Rattlesnake Ridge." "Was the house just to the west of the intersection by any chance?" she asked. "It was right up by the Possum Hollow Cemetery. Yes, it was just a little west of Possum Hollow, not too far from the trail leading down into the hollow."
"You mean the road?"
"No, there's footpath," Hoke explained. "Reed's Trail, I believe it was called. Ran off in a couple of different directions, mostly down into the holler. Now, Reed was the name of the family who built the place where Sheriff Ross lived up on the ridge." Tricia nodded slowly. "Tell me what you know about Sheriff Ross." "Some said that Johnny Ross was one of the best sheriffs Fuller County ever had. They was full of fudge. Johnny Ross was as crooked as a dog's hind leg. That affair with the Brown family, the search for the parents was nothing but a sham. The only reason there was a search for them was to cover his own tail end." Hoke carefully wound the cable from his microphone while he talked, taking care to allow one end to twist free so as to not put any strain on it. "People seemed to like him and voted for him, even though he was the only Republican office holder in a Democrat county." He paused, put his microphone in its case, and then continued. "His biggest problem had to do with a few of his deputies. They were a bad bunch, they were. The way I heard it, not a one of them could be trusted any further than you could throw them."
"Wouldn't he have hired his deputies?" Tricia asked.
"I might have thought so, but according to my daddy, Sheriff Ross didn't have any choice in the matter. There's something pulling the strings, someone pulling the strings, someone who practically owned Fuller County until Zeke came up and put him out of business."
"Well, who would that be?"
"Daddy never told me directly, but I'd done some reading and figured out it might be Lou Gilbert, the fellow who owned Gilbert's Tavern up in Prentice."
Tricia smiled at the mention of the name. "I've heard of him, but it was a little before my time, I'm afraid."
"It was before my time, too, Mrs. Michaels. Place disappeared some point in the 70s, after years of sharp decline. Sat smack in the middle of downtown Prentice, not a block and a half from the jail. Had a clock over the front door lit in neon. First neon sign in this part of Ohio, anyway. It was said at one time that the place never closed. State liquor people knew what was going on, but none of them dared to go in there."
By this time, Tricia and Hoke were taking Hoke's equipment out to his minivan. Glenn helped, listening to the conversation.
"There's this name that came up a few times this afternoon, Quentin Russell."
"I've heard that name a time or two."
Hoke here appeared to be a little disturbed by the notion.
"Now, what do you know about him?"
"How long have you lived in Magnolia, Mrs. Michaels?"
"I've been here for a while."
"And people in these parts don't talk about Quentin Russell, at least without knowing who they're talking to. His name has become a dark chapter in the history of these parts. Some say he's still active. If I were you, I'd just leave well enough alone. You have a lot less to worry about that way."
Tricia took Hoke's advice, at least until she and Glenn were on their way home. The rest of the group had headed over to the local Big Boy to have dessert before heading home to wonder why, when they'd done all that dancing, that they could never seem to lose any weight. Most of the people who'd been at the dance were already seated when Glenn, Tricia, and Hoke arrived to join them. An hour later, they were back on the road, headed for home.
"Well, why didn't Fred and Kitty join us at the restaurant?" Glenn asked while they were on their way.
"That's a good question," she answered. "It may have something to do with Fred's reputation. There's no telling what Hoke or any of the other dancers were told about Fred or what happened.
On the other hand, one or the other of them might have been tired. Praying over appliances can be hard work."
Tricia chuckled and smiled.
"Something wasn't quite right about what Earl and Sally were telling us," she remarked a few miles down the road. "I find it hard to believe that Sally knew something about every other sibling except for Tim. By the same token, Tim doesn't seem to want anything to do with his brothers and sisters. If you don't mind, I'm going to do some digging in the next couple of weeks to find out more about the disappearance of Jim and Nadine Brown."
Glenn nodded in agreement. Maybe you can ask about around about Quentin Russell while you're at it. There might be something to it. If folks don't want to talk about something, there's usually a good reason for it. Tricia just smiled and said nothing else in the rest of the way home. She wondered if she would eventually have the courage to tell her husband about her own near miss with Russell's men. Scattered seeds. Tricia spent much of Sunday on her back porch, taking advantage of the spell of warm weather. Before going to bed, she cleared her schedule so she could start her quest to find out what exactly had happened to the Brown family. She was in Sheriff Roy Ball's office early Monday morning, hoping to catch him before he started his usual morning rounds. She had no idea that she was about to run into a buzzsaw. The sheriff's office was jammed with angry people on the verge of being a mob. The ringleaders took Tricia to the side and urged her to have a talk with the sheriff for his own good. "You know him better than most," the man continued. "Talk to him. Tell him that it's time for him to step down and make way for someone else who can do the job." "I can't promise anything," she told him. There is the election coming up, you know." Well, the man reluctantly cleared the way for Tricia to enter Roy's office. Once she was in, she closed the door behind her and let out an audible sigh. "Half the people in Fuller County want my resignation," Sheriff Roy complained once it got settled. "The other half is looking into ways to have me removed by force if necessary. It's all because of the Worry Girl." With at least two other women missing, there's no wonder that there are some upset people outside your office," Tricia concurred. "I'm thinking you might need some help." "You can start by asking Glenn to get out some sort of rumor control started. What people seem to be most afraid of is that Russell's men may be at work again. I know it's been at least 30 years, but you know some things never seem to go away." "I heard mention of Quentin Russell a few times this past weekend. He seems to have quite a reputation." "Well, for someone who has been around for a while, you're right, Tricia." Sheriff Roy poured a cup of coffee from the coffee maker he had set up on the credenza next to his desk. "Cup of coffee?" he offered. She accepted, despite knowing that Roy's coffee was renowned for its awfulness. No one dared tell him, but he seemed to know. He is a frequent morning visitor to Zeke's Cafe. "This interest you have in Quentin Russell or Russell's men, does it have anything to do with what you told me on Saturday about meeting Sally Brown out in Possum Hollow?" "It is," she affirmed. "Actually, I'm interested in knowing about the disappearance of James and Nadine Brown back in the fall of 67. Are there any old files hanging around regarding the investigation?" "Don't know directly," he replied. "Runs in my mind there are a few files going back that far. Give me a few minutes and I'll have Deputy Seeley run down to the records room so you can make a search. If you could come up with the information about Quentin Russell, that much the better." Tricia thanked Roy for his diligence while he made a few calls on the intercom to summon the deputy in charge of the records room to escort Tricia downstairs. In less than a minute, Deputy Will Seeley appeared to lead her to the basement. "Are you looking for a file on a particular case?" Will asked when they arrived in the records room. "I'm looking for the file on the Brown disappearance from 1967. It was in October, if I recall correctly." Deputy Will took a few moments to study the cabinets lining the far wall of the room before zeroing in on a particular drawer. "Should still be in here," he said to himself. He opened the drawer, allowed his fingers to walk through several folders, and then pulled out one to show Tricia. "You may look at the folders over on that table over there if you want anything. If you want anything photocopied, give it to me. I'll get her done. Nothing in any of these files will leave this room. You understand?" Tricia understood. This wasn't the first time she'd been in this room, on any number of rooms just like it throughout the state. The deputy placed the unopened file on a table. Tricia smiled at him, opened the file, spread it out, and went to work. Received call from County Home, 2:45 p.m. They were already at the scene at Brown Home in Possum Hollow, parents apparently missing. Tricia pulled out the portfolio she brought in the room with her. Why a call from the county home, and why so late in the afternoon? Arrived at 3:35 with Deputies Barkley and Carnes. David Brown, 15, truant. Truant officer Kennerly on scene, as well as caseworkers from county home. Kennerly stated that he visited Brown home at 1 p.m. on advice from school board that Brown had been truant for at least 10 days in past month. Kennerly stated he found David Brown taking care of two small children. She'd jotted down the names of the deputies as well as other names as they appeared in the report. Amos Granger thought it best that David Brown stayed with him in case parents returned. Others were escorted to the county home with Rachel Parrish until parents could be located. I intend to interrogate Sally Brown. She went with Mrs. Parrish before I had the chance. Photographs have been taken of each of the children and placed in the file along with family photos of the mother and father. Tricia did a double take on a photo of Sally. She could have been a dead ringer for Lori Smith, but it was also obvious that Sally was more a woman than a little girl when the picture was taken. She reached into a portfolio she kept in her oversized tote to pull out a copy of the photo of Lori Smith to compare her picture with a photo of Sally. Both girls looked similar, but for the difference in age. The other children resembled one or other or both of their parents in one way or another, some looking more like their mother, others more like their father. Tricia summoned Deputy Seeley, asking to have all of the pictures copied. Searched property in neighboring woods for signs of where parents might have gone with no results. Advised oldest son to go to school the next day or be arrested. He pointed out that it would be Saturday. Tricia smiled. David seemed to have appeared to have a sense of humor. She might have liked him. She might have liked him if she had ever met him. There are further notes indicating that several people up and down Hossam Hollow had been interviewed, as well as people at the lumber mill where Jim Brown worked. The first several pages in the file seem to reflect the idea that there was no real concern about where the Brown parents might have gone. Several of their neighbors mentioned that the Browns were known to go into the woods from time to time to gather wild plants to help supplement their meager family income. Will Seeley brought in the requested copies of the photos she requested, then sat back down at his post next to the door. Tricia continued to peruse the file. For over an hour, she kept looking at the details of the search for Jim and Nadine Brown. Investigators from several counties ended up participating in that search, coming up with no trace whatsoever of the missing parents. Any clues they may have had ended up being a dead end. There was no mention of any eyewitnesses. Tricia started to notice that many of the notes written by Johnny Ross seemed to dwell on his desire to interrogate Sally Brown, wondering if she could be sent to the juvenile detention center instead of being housed at the county home with her younger siblings. Signs of erratic behavior, she asked when she saw a similar notation in the sheriff's notes. The final note referring to Sally said something about her not being available for at least 2 weeks as she would be in Cincinnati. She puzzled over that last notation until it dawned on her that Sally Brown might have gone there to have an abortion. She compared the pictures of Sally and Lori again. Sally's complexion was just a little bit different, a sign that she might have been pregnant at the time her parents disappeared. Tricia recalled what Glenn told her about the conversation that he had with Fred Granger. Fred may well have gotten her pregnant at some point after they started trysting in Granger's barn. There would have been another conversation with Sally, preferably away from Earl. Whatever happened to the other children? She started asking herself. She looked through the file folder and found nothing that would tell her where the other children might have gone immediately after being taken to the county home. There would have to be another search and another set of records. Do you know if there's a file on James Brown Jr.? Tricia asked Deputy Seeley on a hunch. He went to the file drawers, extracted the requested file, and placed the new folder on the table. This file here, Deputy Seeley said, pointing to the Jim Brown Jr. file, and that first one you had taken out and read just a week ago today by some deputy from Lawrence County. Why would someone from Lawrence County be interested in what happened here in Fuller County back in 1967, Tricia asked. For that matter, why would a file about a shooting and a bank robbery in Washington County be filed here in Fuller County? Don't know. Seeley rumbled. Good questions. It's probably why Roy told the other deputy that he needed an order from the county court to come down here first. The deputy wasn't a bit happy. Roy did the right thing, Tricia assured the deputy. I'm still puzzled as to why the file on Jim Jr. is here in your records room instead of being up in Marietta. Beats the crap out of me, the deputy told her as he sat back down at his station. Tricia chuckled a bit before perusing the file on Jim Jr. She read that Jim had been getting in and out of trouble almost from the date that his parents disappeared. He went into the foster system when he was just 10 and had been arrested twice before his 11th birthday. He was 12 when he was remanded to the juvenile detention center and ended up staying there until his 21st birthday. He is currently incarcerated in the Lebanon Correctional Facility for his part in a bank robbery where one of the guards was shot and wounded. She was about to close the folder to have Deputy Seeley put it back when she came across an open warrant for the arrest of Jim Brown Jr. on a charge of murder in the first degree. Tricia called the deputy over to ask him about it. Well, don't that beat all, Seeley exclaimed. You recall this being in the folder when you let the other deputy look at it? Seeley shook his head. It's the first time I've really looked to tell you the truth. She asked him to copy the warrant before putting the folder away. There should be another folder, one about Evan Brown's, Tricia suggested. He was a suicide, you know. Well, I had that idea, Tricia stated. I saw the death notice when I was going through the newspapers over the weekend. It said died suddenly at home. I presumed that there wouldn't be a file down here in deference to the family unless there was some doubt about his death. The deputy produced a third folder and set it in front of the writer. Tricia thanked him, then opened the file on Evan. There are the usual crime scene photos taken of a man hanging from a carefully constructed gallows in his basement. There was a note pinned to the corpse. The note was part of what was in the folder. To the person or persons finding me, I'm sorry. If there is any life left in this body when you find it, please do not try to revive it like you did the last time. Honor my wish and have my body cremated and disposed of with no memorial of any kind. Please understand I am leaving this existence due to an immense sadness which has been part of my life for almost as long as I can remember. Some of it had to do with seeing my oldest sister raped by the county sheriff not long before I started in the first grade. I've never been able to get that terrible picture out of my mind. It's haunted me all of my life. I can no longer cope with all the sadness in this world. I'm finally getting rid of the pain. Tricia had to stop reading. The rest of the letter was essentially a last will and testament. A note attached said it had been accepted by the probate court. She asked for a copy of the suicide note as well as copies of photos of the corpse. Deputy Seeley came back a few minutes later with a copy, which she included in her portfolio. It was nearly noon when Tricia finished, and the deputy placed the files back in the drawers. She thanked him, then went back upstairs for another visit with the sheriff. Thankfully, the mob which inhabited the outer office had dissipated by the time she was up. Are you aware of the contents of Evan Brown's suicide note? She asked Sheriff Roy. All I know is there was a note attached to the body when Deputy Seeley discovered it. He told me that he thought it was Evan's will, so I had it sent directly to probate court. I'll have to admit that I never read it. I just put it directly into the investigation folder once it came back from probate. Tricia took her copy of the note out of the portfolio to give to the sheriff to read. Well, I'll be goddamned, he said after reading the first portion of the note. Let's see. He said that he was in the first grade when he saw them. Roy sat back in his chair and made some faces while he made some mental calculations. That would have put the alleged rape somewhere in the summer of 67 and would have implicated Sheriff Ross. Looking at the folder about the disappearance, I saw a number of notes about Sheriff Ross wanting to talk to Sally Brown and expressing disappointment that he was unable to see her or to question her because she was in the custody of the county home. There was something else interesting in the disappearance folder as well, Tricia continued. There was reference to Sally being sent to Cincinnati for at least a couple of weeks in that time frame. At the time, Cincinnati was where young girls were sent to have abortions. You know, she was only 13 when her parents disappeared. Huh, Roy exclaimed. So, Johnny Ross most likely raped and impregnated Sally. Roy shook his head in disbelief. She could have been impregnated by her brother or by Fred Granger, Tricia told Roy. According to what Fred told Glenn, Sally was having his relations with both David and Fred. Fred also stated that he and Sally were trysting in a barn belonging to Fred's parents when a sheriff's deputy came to Brown's door early in the morning on the day that the parents disappeared. Fred seems to think that the deputy struck and killed Nadine Brown with the help of an accomplice. Have you taken the time to read any of the Brown family files? Tricia continued. Tell you the truth, not really, Roy sighed. I've been too busy chasing down all the crack houses and drug rings popping up around here to bother with old news. Other than that fellow who was in here last week, those files have never been touched by at least three sheriffs going back. I understand why that fellow came to dredge up those files. You think it may be deputy of the Lawrence County had a dog in that fight? Like to find out, Tricia stated. I'd also like to find out why a file on a crime committed in Washington County is here in the records of Fuller County. You're talking about the file on Jim Brown Jr., right? Tricia nodded her head. Files here are duplicate files. Sheriff over to Washington County sent duplicates here because of the case of his parents disappearing. It's done as a courtesy, you see. That clears up one mystery. Tricia smiled. Now I have another one. Are you aware of an arrest warrant against Jim Jr. on the charge of capital murder? You're kidding, right? Roy said, stumbling over his chair to look at the document Tricia had just put on his desk. I wish I was, she sighed. The interesting thing about this warrant is it was issued a mere 20 years ago, yet I'm the only person who's ever seen it. Roy inspected the document, then called Deputy Seely to have him bring the file upstairs. He arrived a few minutes later. The warrant was found and expected. Most likely a forgery, Roy declared after going over the document with a fine-tooth comb. Just to be sure, I'll work on trying to cross-reference this with the Washington County Sheriff. Wouldn't hurt to have this taken to the state crime lab as well to see what they say. He returned Trisha's copy of the warrant, promising to let her know what had found out just as soon as possible. Thanks, Roy, she said when he gave back the document. While you're at it, could you have a talk with Judge Shoemaker about letting me go into the adoption files from the county home? I know that those files would otherwise be closed, but they may come in handy. Sheriff Roy agreed and started to make arrangements after Tricia told him what files she was after. There's one other thing that bothers me, she mentioned before leaving Roy's office. I saw the post-mortem pictures of Evan Brown. And for the life of me, it looks as if he had been garroted, as if someone else killed him and set up his body to make it look like a suicide. If you have the chance, look at that file again and let me know what you think. Maybe that last shot wasn't fair, Tricia thought as she headed up to the sheriff's office to get in her car. She drove down to Magnolia with a wicked grin on her face, hoping for a late lunch with Glenn.